Mother, man.
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal Mayhem! What is up, Chris Shawback?
Yes, sir.
Fuck yeah, man. It's Podcasting
Tuesday. Podcast Tuesday. Came by early to get another coat of mud on that wall in there in the new studio.
I'm pumped to talk about that. We've got that here in the segment to talk about the new studio, the new digs going on.
It's going to be fucking fire, dude.
Yeah, it's going to be badass. I can't wait to discuss it because people are going to be excited when they hear what we got to say. But, dude, holy shit, episode 30, man.
Hell yeah.
Milestones just fucking... flying by, man. It's fucking insane. I was really thinking, like, the 50th seemed like pretty far off the last time we talked about
it. Now it's not really that fucking far away.
It really isn't. You know, a few months away, we're there.
Yeah, so it's fucking nuts.
It's going to be crazy. Now, episode 29, I thought was cool. Little Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
No. You know, doing the horror thing for October.
Yeah, had to keep that up, which was just fun. Got a lot of good listens.
Little palate cleanse, because, dude, I am so fucking psyched.
This guy that we're doing, man.
To do the feature tonight, because...
he's a fucked up individual, sir.
He is, and I know a lot of people aren't going to be familiar with him, but we were supposed to do the Watseka Wonder.
Yeah, a little haunted house where murders happen here. Another one in Illinois, in Watseka, Illinois.
Yeah, the possession case, very, very interesting.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was, the possession.
Yeah, and in Watseka, Illinois, which really is not very far from where we are, a very famous haunting slash possession. But since we had done all that stuff in October, we kind of thought, you know, let's
bring some murder back to
this shit. Yeah, we need some murder in our lives, so... we're going to do some nasty ones here coming up. So tonight is the first, but that's why we kind of shook it up. I know we mentioned this last week, but just in case, I know you guys we're pretty guarded about what's coming up because we want you to be kind of surprised. But we have episodes built in already till I think the end of January.
Yeah, we got a lineup of stuff we're going to talk about.
Stacked. So. And we've got, even after that, we've got a little... short list of some ones we're going to do, just haven't figured
it out. Just haven't figured out where we're going to do them, when we're going to do them, and whatnot.
Yeah, and anytime something's hot in the news, like I know we were talking about making a murderer in the new
season.
Yeah,
doing one on that. We talked about that a little bit.
A Stephen Avery, Brandon Dassey episode, which would be really cool to do, especially with it being on Netflix. So we do try to keep in time with stuff like that, but... for the most part, we're doing obscure stuff that's happened, you know, a while ago. So,
a long time. Yeah.
So
before I was born.
Right. Well, you know, we've done some, you know, like the Gita Ray one.
Gita
Ray
was forever ago.
1500s or some crazy shit. So we're all over the place, but, you know, not everything we do is newsworthy, so to speak.
It's
from older cases that we find interesting. So
but this time we're going to do fucking the Candyman, Dean motherfucking Corll.
Dude, I'm so fucking pumped for some Dean Corll. Yes. He is a sick motherfucker.
Sick. Sadistic motherfucker.
And a lot of people listening might not even know who he is. Obscure, but I don't know how with 28 fucking victims.
Body count and the brutality of it. The nastiness.
I mean, sex organs gnawed off.
Yeah.
I mean,
so bad.
Gnawed off, dude. That has got to be the most fucking brutal shit.
That's fucking...
I mean, I don't know how much worse you can get.
Some Chikatilo shit.
Totally, dude. So this guy is really fucked up. And so we're going to have a little bit of fun with this one today because of how brutal he was. And of course, always with this stuff, you know, we're joking around because that's the show. But we don't endorse these fucking idiots. I mean, we think they're scum.
Bunch of fucking morons.
Yeah, they're fucked up. But, you know, we're having some fun because it's Murder Metal Mayhem, and that's what we do.
And that's what we do.
So we'll talk more about him. But an interesting tie-in with a well-known serial killer, John Wayne Gacy, citing Coral and those other two guys is like Henley. Inspiration, yeah. Dude. Like, he got a lot of ideas
on what,
from Coral.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
So that's interesting because I'm sure a lot of people don't know that. So we'll talk about all that. And we've got our buddy over
CK.
In Danbury, Connecticut, CK, doing a live call-in tonight.
Going to be talking a little bit about some Black Sabbath.
Yeah, he's been excited about this. Black Sabbath's one of my all-time favorites, and he thought
right.
Kind of tough to summarize Sabbath in a 20-minute segment, you know? So he's going to do it in multiple parts.
You're talking about Ozzy Sabbath,
yeah.
Fucking
Dio and
Sabbath.
Then the other singers after Dio.
Yeah.
So we're going to do Ozzy Sabbath, I think, tonight is what the plan is. So,
hell yeah.
But CK is the wealth of fucking metal knowledge. So,
and metal wouldn't be what it is if it wasn't for Sabbath. So,
well, yeah. I mean, there's no way. I know people have debated it over the years, but I think what we know of as metal, as
right.
The riffing, the heavy stuff that we both like,
right?
It was all from Sabbath, and we're talking like the late 60s. So, I mean,
that long ago, exactly.
Back in the fucking day. I mean, back in the day. So it's going to be awesome. And they just had such a unique sound. And then the imagery, too, the dark, evil.
The evil, and that's what got them that whole stigma of being Satan.
Right.
Devil worship music
right.
Or whatever. So.
And then think of all the bands after that
that
did the same type imagery.
Exactly.
So they were the first ones really to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we know of. So I think that's going to be awesome to talk about Sabbath. Huge influence on me. And, you know, I don't think you could get much more iconic than Black Sabbath.
No, definitely not.
Now, we also have a killer cage match coming up, dude.
Woo! These guys.
Yeah. We had a usual. We had our fans, listeners, pick some numbers.
Pick some numbers. And
Stacy Dudley and Troy Leach were the two. Thanks, guys, for providing the numbers because we got two going
at it. We got Jeffrey
in
Dahmer.
In one corner, we got
Jeffrey
Dahmer.
We got Jeffrey
Dahmer.
And then over here, we got old hippie-ass Charles Manson.
Yeah,
so,
swastika on his head and
like, all that, like, what
so
the fuck?
Those two in a cage, and we're going to tell you the objects, which are fucking priceless.
Hilarious.
So, Stacy and Troy, you guys are fucked up for picking these numbers you did, because the objects
are
pretty fucking
brutal.
Awesome. So, that's going to be really good. We'll do that in our Mayhem segment. So,
yeah.
It's going to be awesome. And, you know, it's, I think it's about time to fucking tear some shit up.
Shit, yeah, motherfucker.
Do a little murder metal mayhem. So, what do you think?
Let's get it, son.
So consider this a warning shot, motherfucker. Consider this a warning shot. I bet you think you said it all, but you didn't. No, you're not even close.
Dude, fucking propane.
Dude, propane, dude. I remember listening when you first introduced me to them back in the day. I was like, who the fuck are these guys, man?
Oh, I know. I went through such a propane kick, and it was really cool when Low 12 got to open for them.
Right.
On their round 6 tour. We did that show at the Gaslight, dude. That was nuts.
Dude.
Propane at the Gaslight was fucking
fuck
off the
yeah,
hook,
dude. Is that place even open anymore?
No. Well, I'm sure it's something, but I don't
right,
know what
right.
it is. Yeah, they closed it down after the big drug bust situation.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Ha.
Yeah, like people turning up dead on 74 with screwdrivers stabbed to death. Yeah,
that's fun.
Little, yeah. So, I'm glad I never went to the after parties because they always used to invite us, and I was always like, no, thanks, you know, because I knew they were up to some shit.
Right, right.
But then when I heard about that, like,
it's like, Jesus,
the dude,
fuck.
The door guy, like, stabbed motherfucker with a screwdriver and threw him off of 74, and I'm like, holy shit. Whoa.
That.
Yeah. Like, I remember hanging out with that dude and talking
like,
to him a lot, you know.
God damn. And that's what everybody says when they find out somebody's been murdered. I used to talk to that dude all the time.
He's
man.
Just like a normal guy. You know? They're usually the most fucked up, right?
Right.
So, anyway, man, we've been pumped up to do some Dean Coral, little Candyman. And I guess I should say to start, if anybody's wondering, this has nothing to do with that Candyman
movie. No,
nothing.
Zero that. Zero.
Yeah, it's not even the same thing.
There's no bees involved.
Right. This is straight up
brutality.
A totally different thing, and it is so much worse.
This guy was so fucking sick, dude.
Yeah, and his name is so weird, too, with the C-O-R-L-L. So it's Coral.
Yeah, it's Coral. C-O-R-L-L. It's so fucking weird.
It's spelled weird. So if you want to, like, Google this guy and you're not looking at the comment on the...
on the page or whatever. Yeah,
the description of this episode that you're listening to, or you think it's a misspelling. No,
it's
that's
not a
how
misspelling.
It's spelled.
That's literally how
it's
spelled.
It's weird,
yeah.
But, you know, he's known as the Candyman in the Houston area during the 70s, man. That's when he did his thing. Raping, torturing...
all teenage boys.
Yeah, 13 to 20 was their age range. And just absolutely horrible shit. I mean, we're going to get into some really grisly stuff.
Yeah, pretty bad.
Really bad. And he's just a complete piece of shit. But my God, the shit he did to these kids is just awful.
Like 28 of them in at 3 years. Yeah, at least 28 of them.
We're
going to
talk at the
years.
End of this segment that there's a lot more missing kids from that area that they think at least some of them were at his hands, you know?
Yes, yes.
So, but as we mentioned, he's the inspiration in part to John Wayne Gacy, who followed a few years later.
Yeah, sort of a little bit, the handcuff
trick. The handcuff trick, yeah. Gacy was inspired by Henley and his descriptions of that in interviews, so... But he got the nickname Candyman, and we're going to talk about that, and, you know, he's just an awful motherfucker. I mean, just really no other way to say it, but... The murders, he was also called the Pied Piper because of the whole
the
leading
kids
the
following him,
kids
yeah,
away,
yeah. It's kinda, yeah.
Which is fucked up. And then the murders themselves in the media at the time were dubbed the Houston Mass Murders. So that was like the story that kept going.
That kept going through the papers.
These kids
and
were
shit.
Just missing. And, you know, it's that common thing. We hear it all the fucking time. Lower class, poor kids, turning up missing, cops not giving
away.
A fuck.
Yeah,
not
cops don't give a shit.
No. If it was some rich girl in fucking college, like that Natalie Holloway, remember that fucking shit?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that that wasn't fucking awful. And
not, didn't need to be looked into.
Of
but
course. But I mean, my fucking God, it was wall to wall for fucking months, you know?
Right.
But stuff like this.
A bunch of kids just disappear. Nobody gives it from the same fucking area. Yeah. Nobody fucking cares.
Yeah, exactly. Shitty situation. So it seems like we've just heard this story before kind of thing, you know. But Dean Arnold Coral was born in 1939 in Fort Wayne, Indiana. So not too
far from here.
No.
Yeah.
A pretty typical home. Two parents, had a younger brother, later had like a half sister, but
yeah, and his father was real strict and everything. And
yeah, I mean, they argued a lot and they wound up getting divorced when he was young, like 6 or 7 years old, something like that. His mom spoiled him and kind of doted over him and his brother.
Him a lot, yeah.
And so, you know, again, we hear that a lot, you know, the real strict and the like
the
babying.
Yes, that exactly. His mom, they kind of like Gene-esque.
Very much so.
Yeah, Gene-esque. That's
yeah,
the way he was.
Gene-esque.
With...
I like that.
And hey, man, it just popped into my head. And then his brother and him and his mom moved to Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, they moved because they divorced, but she wanted the father to still
be in
their
the
lives.
Kids' lives and everything.
Which is cool. You know, he was
awesome.
In the Air Force or the Army.
The Air Force, I believe.
Yeah, the Air Force, and he was stationed there or near Memphis. So they moved down there, and they tried to get back together in 1950.
Yeah, they did get remarried, but
they did.
That
but
one didn't last either. So, like,
yeah, usually that's like
I've often wondered that. I've literally known people that married the same person again. I'm like, wait.
Right.
What the fuck is going on, dude? Your whole fucking situation was shit the
Haven't
first
you
time.
Watched that movie before? You know?
Yeah, like, come on, man.
But,
I understand
know, I mean,
if you're getting along is one thing, but don't remarry like that. That's weird, man.
It is, but, you know, it's you always say, like, never say never, you know? Like,
I guess, yeah.
Because there's a lot of stuff, you know, as I've done things, you know, it's like, man, I would have never thought I would have, you know, done a podcast, let's say, you know.
Yeah.
And here we are, we're fucking banging it out. So
boom.
Yeah, so you just never know. But yeah, it does seem odd. They tried,
yeah,
but didn't work out.
It was weird.
He was a shy kid, you know, stayed away from other kids. He had a rheumatic fever apparently when he was
what is that exactly?
I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's a really bad fever that fucks you up, like permanent like issues. So like that's why he wasn't allowed to go to
the gym class and everything. Gym, he wasn't supposed to overexert himself and all right. that. Like, and yeah. that doesn't help kids when you're not allowed to go play with them or whatever.
Right.
Kids ain't going to treat you right.
Yeah, and I mean, we hear this a lot, too. Another common refrain in these stories is
a loner.
Shy kid, a loner, kids fucking with them. Because kids are just fucking brutal. I mean,
yeah, kids are assholes. Yeah.
I remember
if your kid's bullying, whoop his ass.
speaking of kids being brutal, just like totally driving this thing off into the weeds, but I just thought of a funny quick story of kids being cruel to each other. I remember once in high school gym class, there was this girl that I was in school with. Her name was Ashley. I'll just leave it there.
Right.
And she was very friendly, you know, with the guys, you know.
Okay.
She put some fucking pussy out there.
Okay? I'm just going to put it there. Like, yeah.
She was
a hoe.
Yeah. But she was like a the rich girl, like preppy kind of chick.
Right.
But she was a hoe. So anyway, we're in gym class and we're stretching. And this dude from one end of the fucking gym, like she was on the other
get
end,
the fuck.
Just screamed out like the whole fucking world heard it. Hey, Ashley, tuck your cunt in. And she was kind of upset.
I can only imagine.
So I just thought of that. Kids
That's
being cruel.
Freaking hilarious.
It was fucking
tuck
brutal.
Tuck your cunt in.
Tuck your cunt in. Yeah. It was so fucking funny.
Oh
yeah, he
God,
got in a little trouble
awesome.
Over that.
Oh, I bet he did.
But it was worth it because I'm still talking about it.
Right? That's fucking
yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, it was fucking great. But, you know, he was sickly. So, yeah, kids fucked with him. His mom, though, she remarries and marries a clock, not a cock. I had to read that twice.
Right, right.
A clock salesman.
A traveling clock salesman.
Isn't it funny how, like, you know, like we went from the traveling dude selling stuff to, like, stores. And now it's Amazon.
Yeah, now they bring the store
to
you.
I mean, what is the traveling clock salesman going to do today?
He ain't going to do shit.
Other than maybe hook up with the phone book guy. There's a fucking phone book on my porch.
Why is there a phone book?
I don't know. I'm like, that's like a fucking relic. You want, dude. Who the fuck is using phone books? I guess old people, but goddamn, you know. I saw that and I'm like, wow. Almost look like fucking hieroglyphics on a cave wall.
It's like fucking going into the Pyramid of Giza and shit. Like,
Totally. I was like, why are they still passing out phone books? So apparently the clock salesman went by the wayside. But Jake West, kind of a cool name.
Yeah, I know, right? It
sounds like
a clock
salesman. Jake West. They moved to Vidor, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, Texas. Southeast
Texas.
Yeah.
Yeah, by Beaumont.
Right by Beaumont. Excuse me. He goes to high school. Starts to interact with the others a little bit more. He actually dates a few girls and actually starts to be somewhat
normal. Like,
you know?
Not all what the fuck?
Discombobulated.
Yeah, discombobulated in the head.
So, yeah, I mean, he just starts to try to, you know, get along with the others and so forth. So that's cool. He, you know, seems to be, you know, decent grades, you know, nothing great, but nothing bad.
Everything seems to be going all right.
Yeah. So now his mom and his stepfather had started a candy company called Pecan Prince.
Yeah, well, the stepdad Tom West,
Jake,
yeah. He, I remember they first started in the garage.
Right.
And he was selling them door to door with the clocks. So he's
wow.
Look.
Clocks
look,
and
I
candy?
Got clocks and candy. I mean, clocks and candy.
Clock candy. Yeah, something like that.
But yeah, then
pretty
they bought
versatile
the building.
Fucking dude, man.
Hey, I mean, I guess you're going to the door. Hey, you want to buy some of my old lady's candy?
Right. I got some Murder Metal Mayhem koozies, man, that might really go good in the kitchen, right?
Exactly.
Got a cookout coming up? You know? So yeah, so Jake was pretty industrious. They started the candy company, and they opened a store, moved to Houston Heights after Dean graduated, and started working at the store. So that's where the Candyman
candy
comes from. Now, Coral's grandmother becomes a widow, and he winds up moving back to Indiana. Didn't really want to, but he, you know, was obligated.
He
had
to go help his grandma. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean,
so this would have been
what a good grandson would do.
That's right. Moves from Texas to Indiana to be with his grandma in 1960. Lives there for 2 years. He actually tries to hook up and marry this girl who turned him down. So
that probably helped his esteem a lot.
Yeah, I mean, anybody would feel kind of shitty about that deal. So he moves back to Texas to help his mom in the candy business. So he gets out of there.
Did his grandmother die, or did she just get put in a home and he bounced?
I don't know. I didn't see anything about that either.
So I don't know.
Or maybe she remarried, or maybe she was okay. I don't know. You know,
he's just like, this bitch don't want to marry me. I'm out, granny. Gotta go.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure of how that all worked out with the grandma, but
yeah, that was fucking weird. I never saw that.
Yeah, I don't know. Hard to say. He moves back though to Texas, and he winds up getting an apartment above the store. His mom though divorces Jake. And then starts her own business, the Coral Candy
Triple C.
Company.
Yeah.
Yeah, Triple C.
Yeah, because didn't they like shut? I think they shut down the Pecan Prince.
I think they did.
She didn't, because Jake had a lot into that one. So she's like, I don't want to be a part of it with you. So she started her own.
Yeah, with the boys, and so they were like competitors actually. So kind of crazy. But Dean was the vice president, and his brother Stanley was the treasurer. And oddly, one of the teenage employees had claimed that Coral's mom made sexual advances toward him. She denied it, but then fired him. So
yeah, I did not. You're fired. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess that makes sense. You don't, if somebody's trying to make those claims, you don't want them around anyway.
Right. Yeah. But you know, you wonder like, was his mom hoeing it out? Like Ashley with the cunt, you know, I don't know, you know, maybe she needed to tuck her cunt in.
Maybe she did.
Maybe she did.
Maybe that's part of what led Dean to his ways.
It's very possible. You know, again, these like weird family situations, you know, we all have had, I mean, nobody's family is perfect. That's for sure. But you know, some of these guys have like these awful upbringings. This really isn't too bad, but it is, you know, maybe some weirdness going on.
No, yeah, it was like a normal, I guess, middle class life for them. A couple divorces here and there,
right.
Or whatever. You're working.
You know,
I mean,
she was trying to get some dick at the fucking store. I mean, whatever.
We'll just go ahead and go back to Cashman's story he told.
Yeah, right. Little cross country skiing.
Yeah, yeah.
So Dean gets drafted into the Army in 1964. Does basic training at Fort Polk, Louisiana. Further advanced training at Fort Benning, Georgia, home of the infantry, and then permanently at Fort Hood, Texas, which is ironically where I was, not at that time. Obviously, I wasn't even born yet, but that's where I was stationed when I was in the Army, was Fort Hood. It's a huge base. I don't know if it still is, but at one time it's the biggest base, I think, in the United States.
Oh, really?
I think so. Because it was huge. There were two divisions there. I was in the first cab, but then they had second armored and a huge base with tons of ranges. And
no,
it was
shit.
Crazy.
Hell yeah.
It was like a city within a city type of thing. So, yeah, so that's where he ends up. But he doesn't like being in the military. He's eventually let out on a hardship discharge.
I got to go help my mommy make candy.
Yeah, I mean, they did, obviously, during Vietnam, which would have been this time, pretty selective of who they let go, because of course everybody's trying to get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, nobody wanted to be there. I mean, just like any war, but
sure. But that one especially was bad because it dragged on so fucking long,
right?
And it was just absolutely brutal psychologically to people. So you know, I was amazed he got out from that. So he may have just got a perfect timing type thing. They let him go.
He got the luck of the draw, pretty much.
Yeah, because, I mean, they are probably not doling those out too much. I mean, anybody that's watched MASH, you know, with Klinger doing his thing,
damn,
trying to get out, you know. Of course, that was the Korean War, but still.
Still, fucking 4077 fucking for days, dude. I'll watch MASH all day long.
That is a funny
fuck what
fucking
you think.
Show.
Yeah, dude, I love that show. But yeah, fucking... In the Army is where he fucking said he first thought he had his first, or started feeling like he thought he was a homosexual or whatever.
Yeah, he had some encounters.
Had some homosexual encounters in the Army and whatever.
Yeah,
so
he kind of says that's where he thinks it started, was that's where he had those feelings. And
right.
He realized he was homosexual. So he does get out, but, you know, he had some, you know, experiences with that. Now, Jake West, like I said, he still owned the other candy company, and they were constantly battling business-wise, apparently. So,
well, like, there was a point to where Jake had actually said to his mom, Martha, was that her name? Said to his mom that there's something going on with your kid, dude.
Oh, wow.
Like, he's not acting right. I think he's she denied it. Like, she always denied that he was a homosexual or whatever.
Yeah, because at that time, that was really you know, not a thing that people embarrassing or
especially
people thought it was, you know, really bad. You know, of course, nowadays people are cool.
Yeah, nobody gives a shit.
Whatever.
Well, some people give a shit, but
yeah, I think that's fucking ridiculous, but people should just do whatever they want. But I know we both agree with
that. Yeah, I don't give a shit. Do what you do.
Exactly. Be happy. So the Coral Candy Company moved across the street from Helms Elementary School. Probably not a good idea.
Not with what's happening.
Because here's where Homie gets his Candyman nickname, because the kids would come around and he would give out free samples.
The kids would be there from the elementary school all the time, crossing the street and everything, coming to get the candy.
Can you get much creepier than that, dude? I mean,
yes.
I mean, a dude fucking giving out candy to the kids. I mean,
and like he would. Made him super happy to see him. Like, he would hang out with the kids, not just give them candy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was, like, oddly into it.
Super oddly into
pretty
it.
Pretty creepy.
And, then, like, the principal of the school and everything had to say, tell him, you got to stop doing this. These kids are crossing the street. They're not supposed to, because they were young kids.
Right.
Like I said, elementary school.
Elementary, yeah, for sure. Now, he's hiring teenage boys to help at the business. He sets up a pool table.
He's got the black lights going.
That's very Gacy, because Gacy was doing that shit, too.
Yeah,
I didn't even think of that.
He had a pool table in his basement and everything.
Yeah, and he had those teenagers with him in the business. So there's a lot of similarities
here. There definitely is.
And, you know, Dean's friends say he definitely started acting different when he started hanging out with these young kids.
It'd be nice if somebody had said some fucking shit.
Well, exactly. It's like, thanks a lot, motherfucker.
Watch
Captain
this.
Fucking
yeah.
Obvious, you know?
Ollie's just a candy maker. He's okay. No, watch this motherfucker, because some shit's about to happen, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's fucked up, but, you know, you hear that a lot. People don't say anything because they think maybe people are going to look down on him for bringing it up, or it's not real, so they're going to look bad. But, man, you know, you think all the misery they could have saved.
A whole lot.
Right. Now, in 67, Dean becomes friends with the 12-year-old David Owen Brooks, who becomes a big player in this whole thing, man, because he starts hanging out with him. They're going to the beach with these other kids at the candy store, and nobody sees anything wrong with this. I mean, it's just so fucked up.
Hung out exclusively with young boys.
Yeah, now Dean starts having sex with this fucking kid, 12 years old.
No.
Yeah.
He starts paying him to let him.
Oh, yeah.
Let Dean. Dean would be like, hey, if I give you this much money, can I suck your dick? Like,
oh, yeah.
What?
Exactly. Yeah, he starts giving the kid, like, commissions for, like, finding him other kids.
Yeah, he did, yes.
Which is really fucked up.
I can give you $200 for each kid or whatever.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's just fucking crazy. Now, Brooks, the kid, was raised by a single mother. And, you know, when he could, he stayed at Coral's place, calling it his second home at the age of 15. So he was a few years older, but still too young. He winds up dropping out of school. He's just, you know, totally fucking wrapped in this Dean Coral bullshit. Hanging out with him at his apartment and all this stuff.
Having all these parties with all these young teen, preteen to low 20s.
Yeah. I mean, it's sick. Now in 68, the Coral Candy Company closes. Coral's mom moves to Colorado. She would actually never see him alive again. So Coral, you know, never saw his mom again. He takes a job as an electrician. So
yeah.
He's doing that, but he's still hanging out with these young kids. Now, this is when the shit starts getting really fucked up. 1970 to 73, like we said, Coral's at a minimum. 28 victims in 3 years. Dude, that's almost one a month. That's fucked up.
Yeah, that's a fucking lot.
That's like a crazy
pace.
And
the thing is, there were spaces in between some of them. He'd like do multiple like quick.
Yes. I mean, he had like a fucking system down. And like we had said, the ages range from 13 to 20. Most of them were raped and tortured for days. and really bad.
Like horrible.
Really
things.
Bad. We mentioned the fucking gnawing of the genitals, fucking yeah, the burning them, sticking stuff in their ass. I mean, really nasty.
He'd do the old freaking glass rod in the urethra and bust it and shit.
That's horrible. That's a glass rod in your dick and then breaking that shit.
Dude.
That is
please
fucked.
Kill me.
Yeah, I mean, that's just awful. So, I mean, really, really nasty shit. Now, most of them were buried in the boat shed, but there were some buried in a beach and then out in the woods.
Woods somewhere. I don't remember the name
of
the place.
His family had a cabin.
Yeah,
or
that's
something.
What it was, yeah.
So the little stabbing cabin.
The stabbing cabin.
He had another torture board, apparently, they found out there. So he was just doing some sick shit. Because he had, that board he would tie him up to, and he would rape him like, right on the fucking board. It's pretty fucked up. I mean, the typical stuff, these kids are missing. You know, the families care. They're all fucking going crazy trying to find them. But the cops are just like, all right, file a report.
Whatever. Yeah, everybody was thinking they were all runaways. Like I said earlier, like any kid that came up missing in this whatever square mile area it was,
right,
the parents would make a report and the cops would be like, all right, we'll put it under runaway or whatever, and then the kids would have these, or the parents would receive letters from the kids that were saying, hey mom, dad, sorry, I found a different job, or I'm okay, whatever,
right,
and then they'd report that to the cops,
right.
And the cops are like, oh, well you've heard
fine.
From him.
Yeah,
now we can
fine.
Take him off our missing persons list.
Right, yeah. Coral was doing that before he started fucking with him.
Yeah, he was forcing him to write these letters.
Or call him. There were some he called.
Call him, yeah.
I mean, that's just fucked
up. And the cops are like, oh, you've heard from him. So, yeah, they're not missing. Yeah, okay, no big deal. You fucking asshole.
Exactly. Now, the other dude gets involved, Elmer Wayne Henley. I also thought that was funny with the middle name Wayne, with John Wayne Gacy. So a lot of weird similarities here. 71 is when he gets involved, and he's the same as Brooks. He's there to help him find other teen victims, giving him the $200 fucking finder's fee, basically, find him fucking new meat.
I was listening to the book, The Man with Candy.
Yeah.
I was listening to that book, and there's a... he said that one of them said that he paid him the first time, but then didn't pay him again after that. They were just doing it.
Really?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure was in that book.
Yeah. I've read the book, but it's been a while. But they were talking about that he had gotten a Corvette from Dean too. Brooks
because
did.
Brooks,
he promised him a car and he got him that Corvette.
That's because Brooks came in on him raping these two young kids.
Oh, yeah, so he wouldn't say anything.
Yeah, he gave him some money and then he promised to buy him a Corvette on his 16th birthday, which he did.
Right,
and he got a green Corvette.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, so, I mean, really fucked up. And this is also, Henley was the one that was doing the handcuff trick thing where he would trick him into putting the handcuffs on.
But he'd have the key on him. So
and then he would, they couldn't get out of the handcuffs like he could. So then he had them and then they did their thing.
Put him on the torture board.
Yeah. And that's where Gacy, claims he got the idea. So very similar, very oddly similar to Gacy.
I could just see Gacy sitting there watching some kind of interview with Henley.
Right.
Like, damn, that's a fucking good idea, dude. Holy shit, why didn't I think of that?
I know what I'm going to do with my life now.
That's probably the night he committed a murder, too. He's like, doing it tonight. Fucking doing it tonight. As soon as I get off work, I'm going to fucking go buy me a motherfucking kid. I'm going to fucking watch this,
dude. I might watch MASH first. And then he's going to go out and do some shit.
You know, I just watch Klinger hanging around in his dresses and
there
shit. And then he's like, yeah.
Gacy all about that. Yeah. Like BTK.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's just fucked up. And then, once they were handcuffed, tied to the bed or the torture board, which was made of plywood, he mounted to the wall.
Yeah, more handcuffs. Like the top of it had handcuffs, and the bottom just had holes that he used rope to tie their legs and just do his vile, vile acts.
Yeah, I mean, really, really bad stuff. Torturing him for days, and then most of them were either strangled or shot in the head with a .22.
Yeah.
and then he would dispose of them. Now, once they were dead, he would wrap them in plastic and dispose of the bodies at the boat shed that he rented, which, again, kind of tying in with Gacy, with burying him in a place where he, you know, of course, Gacy in his own crawl space, but
Coral, he rented a building that had a dirt floor, but he used the lime.
Yes.
He dug, I mean, he stacked the bodies and
he
everything.
He did. I mean, he really knew what the fuck he was doing. He had it like a system down, which is scary.
Yeah, because they would go in with packages that look the size of a human body.
Right.
They'd come back out with a... What did they say, 20-gallon fucking buckets of fucking dirt.
Right.
And the owner of the company never fucking
yeah.
thought anything about it. Like, right. okay.
Yeah, whatever. Pay my rent, motherfucker.
And
right.
there was a point that he wanted to fucking, was asking her about renting another one, too.
Right. Yeah, because it was filling up.
Yeah, it was filling up with bodies. He's
yeah,
like,
I mean,
hey.
He was putting them at a beach, and then in Jefferson County, Texas, and then near the cabin that his family owned.
Right.
Out in the woods. So there were victims all over the place. Now, some of them, before he killed, he would have them write the letters, like you said, or have them call so the parents would think they were okay. And they just assumed the kid ran away, or even if they didn't think he did, the cops, like you said, would just blow it
off. Yeah, they just didn't care. Fucking, yeah. Who cares?
So it made, you know, and then he was moving around a lot, too, which made it hard to track him down, Coral, because he was all over the place.
I heard it in the book, or I read in something else, that he had like 5 different places a year in this 3 years. He,
right.
like, moved that much. Like,
right.
I live here for a while. Like,
right.
within a year, 5 different residences.
Right. Yeah. So it was really hard for anybody to keep tabs on where the fuck he was. He was still in that Houston area, but he was
yeah,
moving.
He was still in that area, just not at the same residence.
Yeah. Now, what was fucked up was Henley helps Coral tie up Brooks to the bed and abuse him before finally releasing him. But it's crazy. Brooks just continues to fucking help him. So it's like really weird, you know, that whole, you know, was that Munchausen fucking.
That Munchausen by proxy.
Yeah, where you start to like sympathize with your captor and all this shit.
Right.
So
yeah, that's fucking
that's
crazy.
Fucked up. So I'm not sure, you know, what the deal is there. 1973, David Brooks marries his pregnant fiance, and Elmer Wayne Henley becomes the only person helping Coral. So it's just Elmer Wayne Henley and Coral. And the murders do slow down because, you know, they just...
Hey, when you can't get enough product in right. as fast as you were, I mean...
You don't have
you
your
gotta
help.
You got to keep employees,
can't keep
bro.
Help. Yeah, you got to do like a 401k or
yeah,
something.
Exactly.
That's the thing. August 8th, 73. Now, this is when the shit goes down. Now, Henley, who was 17 at the time, invites a 19-year-old kid to Coral's house to party. David Brooks is not there.
They huff and paint.
Huff and paint.
They love to huff paint.
They did.
Well, that was the thing why everybody was at Coral's party. Because
right.
he'd have like minor parties where it was just like pops and chips and everything. But then he'd have the teenager parties where he'd buy them beer, he'd give them weed, huff and paint, all
Damn,
that shit, dude.
That's fucked up. And they drank way into the evening. They left to get some food and ran into Rhonda Williams, who was a 15-year-old girl. She was kind of running away. She had an issue with her dad. And they invited her to come along and party. So, but when they got to Coral's...
Coral was pissed.
He was fucking jacked.
Like, what the fuck are you doing bringing a girl over
yeah,
here for?
She's got fucking boobies, man.
Yeah,
we can't
be having titties in here, bro. Yeah, no titties
no,
up
No,
this
is a sausage party, motherfucker.
Yeah, so he fucking grabbed fucking Henley and drug him away, like bitching at him.
Right.
And he finally calmed down.
Yeah, they got him
like,
chilled out,
Let's
but
start
he was
huffing
not
some paint.
Fucking happy.
No, yeah. So he's like starting to let him huff more paint.
Yeah, so he must have gone through some fucking paint because, yeah, these were some huffing fucking fools. They got all fucked up and passed out.
Yeah, and Coral's all fucking
That's the
him up.
Wrong fucking place
yeah,
to pass out.
Yeah, that's the wrong place to pass out. Yeah, so Coral freaking ties him up and Henley was almost tied up when
yeah,
he
wakes
up
like what
he's
the
like,
fuck
what the fuck dude no hold on
and he convinces him to let him go
yeah.
and help you know to rape the others so.
Yeah he's like I'm gonna because Coral was like naked
Right.
And he's like, well, I'm raping this kid that you brought over here. You're going to rape this girl. And we're going to torture them together.
Yeah, he gave him a big hunting knife and wanted her to cut her clothes off and all this shit.
It's pretty fucked, dude.
Yeah, that's pretty scary. The thoughts
in this dude's brain are fucking weird, man.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't imagine what would go through your mind when you wake up and see Coral naked, tying you up, putting duct tape over your mouth, when you know what he does.
Yeah, like, well, my fucking life's over, bro.
Right? Yeah, I'm going to get my fucking nutsack fucking chewed off, you know?
God damn.
Or some crazy shit. So, yeah, it was pretty fucked up. And so he does let him go to help. And he's got the male face down. And the 15-year-old girl, Rhonda, was on her back. And they start doing their thing and assaulting him and shit. But then something changes, man. And
Henley got a hold of the Coral's 22, and he's like, "Fuck you! I'm not going to let you kill my friends anymore, man.
Yeah, this is over.
I can't let you kill all my friends, or something." Yeah,
right. Yeah, it's fucked up because I mean, I'm sure you reach a fucking breaking point, like, dude, this is fucked up. You know,
why am I even a fucking part of this?
Yeah, and Coral was like taunting him, like, "You're not going to shoot me," type thing.
Go ahead, you won't fucking do it, and he fucking shot him.
And Henley fucking unloads, first shot in the forehead, the next two in the shoulder,
and when he spun around, he shot him three more times, and he just fucking slams against the wall.
Slides down and fucking totally naked. There's a picture online you could see of him laying there dead. It's like a police type photo.
Right, yeah, crime scene photo.
But he's fucking naked as a motherfucker, and he's dead.
Jesus Christ.
So that might be one of the reasons why Coral never got quite the notoriety, because he was dead. I don't know. Maybe
that might have been it.
Because a lot of these dudes like Manson, you know, you see prison interviews.
Right.
And books written. And there's really not much written about him other than the book that you mentioned.
Right. Or like Gacy or Dahmer or whatever.
Right.
They catch him and it's like a huge, like, we found.
Right.
You guys are never going to believe what we found out.
Right. And the other thing, too, is think about the timing. Manson. You know, because when we did the Zodiac episode, we talked about him, like, relatively obscure up until that Zodiac movie came out.
Right.
In the, you know, whenever that was in the years ago, but it wasn't like that long ago. But he was in relative obscurity other than people like us that dig this kind of shit.
Right.
And I think this might have been similar. It was just overshadowed by Manson, dude. That was so sensationalized. The Manson murders, which I think was 69, was when that was going on. So it would have been around this time. And that might have been it. I think also Vietnam. The protesters, and that was like wall to wall.
That was all over the news then.
So I'm thinking, I mean, I'm sure in Houston it was a big deal, and probably throughout Texas. But really beyond that,
that's so weird,
not so much. And so, yeah, with 28 victims, I mean, that's a lot. You know, and the... After they shot him, they debated, like, what are we going to do? Henley was, debating on just taking off.
They eventually called the cops, though.
Yeah, they were like, no, we need to call the police. So they did, and Henley did that. It says here at 8:24 a.m. on August 8th, 1973. And they actually waited for the Pasadena, Texas police just sitting there on the porch, just like, fuck it.
Called him. He's like, hey, I killed this guy.
Right.
I need you over here.
Yeah. And I, you know, was just defending myself and my friends. And he told the police, you know, what happened. He wanted to get it off his chest, but he just said, hey, you know, I had no choice. You know,
I had to do it. He was going to kill me and my friends.
Right. So at first, though, they didn't believe him. He's pretty rough looking. If you look at pictures of him, like when he was arrested, he looks like
homeless. For sure.
Pretty rough motherfucker, but you know, he was telling them what happened, but they were skeptical. They thought maybe he was like the ringleader type thing.
Right.
And didn't think that Coral, because he was pretty, I mean, a fairly upstanding citizen, especially
as far as everybody, all the adults knew, or everybody else knew. Yeah. He was just a straight laced fucking dude. No big deal. Whatever.
Right. Yeah. The kids obviously knew something different, but
a lot different,
but the adults, like you said, really had no idea. And then he starts showing them where the bodies were. And that's when they knew Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They searched his house, and that's when they found the fucking the torture board.
Right.
And then they... A white windowless Econoline van.
Can't get much more raper than that, right?
No, not at all. And then they open it, they find another torture board, and there was a box that said it was big enough for a person to get in, but not very comfortably.
Right.
Like, so shitty. And then he started naming all the victims' names, and they went and looked at records. And lo and behold, they're just marked off as a runaway, stupid.
Right, yeah, that's just terrible, but you're right. I mean, they started realizing, oh my God, I mean, these are all these kids that were missing, you know?
Exactly.
So they used prison trustees to dig up at the boat shed, and they start pulling body after fucking body.
Which using the prisoner's trustees as to dig in for bodies is probably the best idea.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, why not make them fucking do something, right?
Dude, and they fucking the dirt was just so saturated and just putridity and just body. Fucking
I mean, just think of like the worst beer farts ever. Like times like 50 50,000. I don't know, it gotta be fucking bad.
August in Houston in an unventilated metal shed.
Yeah, dude. Really, dude,
what the fuck?
That's gotta be nasty. Now they found, you know, they medical examiners realized all the victims had been sodomized. So kind of a Panzram tip of the cap.
Yes.
Tortured by plucking out pubic hairs, having their genitals chewed off, items shoved in their rectums, as you mentioned, glass rods placed into their penis, and in some cases broken so the glass would cut them from the inside. So,
oh, fuck.
Really nasty shit. So just absolutely horrible. Now, David Brooks winds up turning himself in. But he denied involvement in the murders. But now
he was part of this shit, too.
Right. Henley spills the whole fucking thing. He admits to everything, but he also implicates Brooks. So Brooks doesn't quite get off like he thinks he's going to get off. And he also, Henley led the police to the beach and the wooded spots, too. So he showed them where everybody was buried. So he was, you know, very helpful. But like you said, they found in every location,
found multiple bodies,
the van, his house or apartment. They found,
the cabin had all sorts of shit, stuff, too,
the torture boards, the ropes and chains and all kinds of crazy shit. Plastic, which is what he used 18 to wrap
18-inch double-headed dildo was on the list of shit they found. And he was using this on little teenage fucking boys.
Yeah.
What a fuck.
That's just awful. Now, at the time, Coral had surpassed the 25 victims' body count of Juan Corona.
Juan Corona, really, yeah, I know. I wasn't either until
Might have to check out old Juan in California in 1971, but then, of course, was surpassed by Mr. John Wayne Gacy with 33. So,
right, the 33.
And we've got some surprises coming up later this month, and we'll just leave it there. So that should be good. But you know, he was influenced by these guys, Gacy was. So it took years though to identify some of the victims, which is sad. But you know, as forensics improves, you know, they can figure shit out better than they could back in the day.
Right.
They gave them all separate trials. Henley was given a 99-year sentence for each of the six victims. For a total of 594 years at Huntsville. They wound up transferring him, but Huntsville's where they do the executions. I know because I had to do a lot of research on that prison because I used that prison in my Dreadful Lives of Enoch Strange.
Oh, right,
book,
right. All right.
Where Nolan Weeks is on death row. He's in death row at Huntsville. He was given a retrial, though, in 1979, but the conviction was upheld. So... Brooks was sentenced to life in 75, showed no emotion when he was sentenced. His wife, of course, crying.
Yeah, it's like, are you serious?
Pretty shitty.
We were going to get married. Fucking.
Yeah, I mean, just awful. They had a baby. He appealed, but it was not even thrown. It was just thrown out. They were like, fuck you. No.
Yeah, you're in here for life, dude. You're done.
Whatever. So in 2008, though, was one of the last, or the last victim was identified. due to, you know, forensics advancements.
Oh,
so,
way big, different forensic advancement.
Yeah, so that's cool. I mean, at least they gave the family closure, but that's just got to be awful that many years later. Now, incredibly, Rhonda Harris, who, of course, survived.
Yes, that was the chick that was with him when he got killed.
Right. Yeah. And she was just, like, so grateful of Henley that she's became, like, pen pals. She visits him every now and then. Because she feels kind of obligated, like, hey, this guy saved my life.
Which he pretty much, he did. If he didn't kill Dean right. was going to kill them 100%.
They probably all would have been dead. So, yeah, I mean, he did save her. So I thought that was kind of
It's a good thing Henley woke up when he did.
Without a doubt, yes. And there were more than 40 kids, additional 40 kids missing in Houston at the time of the killing spree. So, my God, it could have been 68.
Who knows?
I mean, a lot of fucking kids that are still unaccounted for. Who knows what the hell happened?
Well, and also when they were digging in the shed, there was supposed to be still two bodies in there, but they shut it down, like, quit digging.
Yeah. I mean, it was just the families were just, it's awful. Now, there was something I read, a little bit of, you know, conjecture that maybe Coral was part of a national... a sex ring with young boys. And I know you mentioned, dude, when you were doing your research, you said he had said something to one of them.
Well, when he first was talking to Brooks, when Brooks first found him with those two kids that he was molesting, excuse me, when he called him, he's like, whoa, he said he was into the fucking child pornography business.
Oh, okay.
And then he changed it to sell him into sex slavery or whatever. And then he finally... like later down the road was like, no, I'm killing these kids.
Yeah.
He kind of escalated what he was doing. So like, I don't know.
Yeah. That's pretty fucked up. So who knows? The police didn't even want to go any further with it. They knew the families had just been through enough. So right. We don't know. But there could have been a lot more than 28.
Definitely.
Now for the research, I watched several documentaries on Dean Coral, read the book like you did, The Man with the Candy by Jack Olson, which is kind of like the book. If you're going to read one on him, that's the one, because there really isn't a lot out there. And you had it on Audible, too. So
yeah, I listened
to
it, yeah.
Couple of movies loosely based on the Houston mass murders and Dean Coral, yet he seems to remain very obscure, possibly, like we said, overshadowed by Manson. Which, you know, Vietnam, protests. I mean, a lot of shit going on at that time. Next time, now we got one coming up, dude, next week.
From New Mexico.
When we talked about even doing the podcast and we kind of brainstormed on some, we were like, man,
gotta
David Parker Ray.
We got to do them at some point, man.
Yeah, we knew we wanted to do the obscure ones. And I would say he's, you know, people do know who he is, but probably a lot don't.
Right.
The toy box killer,
man. He was fucking...
Oh, my God.
Between who we just talked about and this guy here, man, it's
they're
pretty
like two
fucked.
Of the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he said. We get some really sick motherfuckers coming up because David Parker Ray... with the torturing and the fucking killing
bad.
and the fucking sadist shit in the trailer made for torture,
hence toy box.
Right. Yeah. Ugh. So it's really bad. I mean, to the point where the lead FBI agent at the scene, after watching all the videotapes, because
she killed herself
because it was so horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine that, an FBI agent killing herself after watching this shit.
Yeah, so that's what you got coming up next
week,
folks.
So get the kiddies gathered around your speakers and jam out some Murder Metal Mayhem, because we're going to Elephant Butte.
Elephant Butte, what the fuck?
Yeah, and it's next to the town Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, which is a funny story. So we're going to go there next time, so definitely you don't want to miss that shit.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by the people at the Coral Colonoscopy Clinic. They care about your colon and want only the best things to be shoved inside it. So, go on into their clinic at 6969 Fudge Lane in Houston and tell them Murder Metal Mayhem sent you. And make sure you ask for the Big Daddy Special. We are not responsible for what happens to your anus, colon, or anything whatso-fucking-ever. So, dude, we had to do that to you, man. I mean, in your situation, dealing with colon cancer.
Yeah, it seemed like the kind thing a good friend would do.
Yeah, because you're fucked up, dude. I mean, you've told some gnarly fucking stories, so I knew you would think that was funny. So,
fuck yeah, dude.
Little Coral Colonoscopy Clinic. So.
Hell yeah. So how's it going out there on the East Coast, dude? Yeah.
Love it.
What's up with Wildman Street, dude?
Not much. We had cops here the other night.
Oh,
it was
shit.
Awesome.
Damn. Is that dude doing his volleyball shit, or is that over with the season?
I think they had the last game a couple, a week ago.
Yeah, they have these fucking volleyball games in this dude's backyard. It's like fucking house party over
Jesus
there.
Oh,
Christ,
yeah.
Dude.
But, the fucking Halloween at the fucking college kids down the road, I guess, had a party, and the cops had to come like 3 times before they got the fucking idea to leave.
Oh, Jesus.
You probably ought to get that idea after maybe the second time at least.
Right.
No, they fucking, they left, and I guess they were trying to hide till the cops left, and the cops fucking saw them and said, you know, get the fuck out, and, you know,
shit.
It was kind of comical.
Yeah, that's
pretty
funny.
I bet it was.
So, yeah, that's some fucked up shit, but, it's, good to have you on, dude, and, we're going to talk about some metal. We prepped it a little bit, telling people what we were going to do, but yeah. Definitely want to hear what you got to say. I heard the train again.
Heard
the
train.
So
the nine, what, the 920 or whatever the fuck it is,
something like that. Yeah. So what's what you got to talk about, man?
Well, originally I wasn't even going to do anything with this band, only because I assume, you know, it's fucking Black Sabbath.
Yeah, everybody knows.
I assume
Sabbath.
People. Probably knew about Sabbath or had an idea, and I assume people do. And I mean, me and you were talking about doing like a Dio thing,
right?
And obviously with the Dio thing, you got to bring up Sabbath. Then I was thinking about doing a segment on the later Sabbath stuff with the singers after Dio.
Right.
So, you know, it only made sense. Well, if I'm going to do those two, I got to start at the beginning with Ozzy.
Right.
100%.
So the way we're going to do it is it's going to be like three different segments. It's going to be the Ozzy years, the Dio years, and the years with Glenn Hughes, Ian Gillan, and Tony Martin.
Okay.
So that's the way we're going to do it. So tonight's going to be from the beginning, the start with Ozzy. When they originally formed in 1968, they originally were called the Polkatolk Blues Band.
Oh, damn,
dude.
All right, fucking figure that one out.
The Polkatolk Blues Band.
It was supposedly...
I never knew that.
I didn't either.
I guess in England it was some sort of men's hygiene thing.
Oh, my God.
Something like that. It was the name of men's hygiene. I have no clue.
That's weird.
Later, they just shortened it to the Tolk Blues Band and eventually named themselves Earth.
Right. I knew they were called Earth before.
Yeah, they were called Earth for a while until there was an issue with another band called Earth who was also touring in England. So they changed the name to Black Sabbath after the 1968 Boris Karloff film.
Right.
That was Geezer Butler's idea.
That's a great idea.
You know, so and great name.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
50 years later, they're probably the iconic metal band. The original metal band. You know, there's always been that argument. Led Zeppelin was the first metal band.
No way.
Zeppelin was heavy, but Sabbath is the first metal band.
They were dark and they were darker and everything.
Subject
than Zeppelin.
Matter.
Yeah.
We talked about the dark imagery. I mean, it's
the beginning of occultism and music, you know,
right.
The dark imagery and, the riffing. You know, and their sound actually started because of, it was actually by accident.
Right.
If nobody knows, Tony Iommi on his fretting hand, his two middle fingers or the tips of his fingers are gone. He lost his tips on the last day of his job before he turned professional as a musician.
That's something else I never knew.
Yeah, he was going to not go into work after lunch, I remember, and his mom was like, no, you got to finish the day out. So he goes back to work, gets the fucking tips of his fingers cut off.
He works in the machine shop. Yeah, he works in the machine shop, and he goes on a machine he's never worked on before, and he clipped the tips of his fingers off.
That's fucking shitty, especially when you're a guitar player and it's your fret hand.
Right.
Yeah. So you know, he's like, you know, my career is done. You know, he's in the hospital, and I guess his boss came by and showed him, you know, played him some Django Reinhardt, who I guess had some. I guess he had a way of playing with two fingers.
Right.
That was his style, showing Tony, you know, you could still play. But Tony went further, and he actually made prosthesis for his two fingers.
Oh, really?
So he could fret. And what he did was he lowered the tuning of his guitar to get that nasty
make it
sound.
To play.
Yeah, definitely to get that nasty sound, which would become, you know, the sound of Sabbath. So if nobody knows, Sabbath was originally Ozzy, Geezer Butler, Bill Ward, and Tony Iommi. They formed in 68, like I said. They recorded their first album in 1970 titled Black Sabbath, an album that was recorded in 12 hours.
that's crazy.
That's nuts, dude.
You know, did
they play like all at the same time or did they record tracks?
I believe they recorded the basic tracks together and added some overdubs. Okay. It wasn't much. They didn't have much time.
Right.
So that album came out in 1970 and you know, the first song, Black Sabbath, at that time in 70, in early 70s, you never heard anything like that fucking song.
That's fucking brutal.
You know, that sound, that eerie sound with the thunder. Then going right into that after that into The Wizard,
right?
You know, and NIB.
Yeah, it's a great
NIB's
album, man.
So fucking good.
It's fucking killer.
You know, and 4 months later they go back in the studio to capitalize because the album actually did pretty well on the charts, in America and in Great Britain. You know, it did well. So they capitalized on it, went in back in the studio 4 months later to start work on their second album.
That's a quick fucking turnover rate.
Yeah, at that time, you know, they were recording, most bands were recording two albums a year, at least one album a year, you know.
Yeah.
Not this 3-4 years later we put out a follow-up to the last album bullshit.
No, they were actually making music.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this album would go on to become their second album, Paranoid. And the funny thing is, the one song that it's named after, Paranoid, was the last song to be written as a filler tune.
Really?
It was written just to fill the album, so they didn't have enough time on the album. So the producer said, you got to come up with something quick. And, you know, and Tony came up with the riff. They recorded it. Isaac came up with the lyrics. And to this date, it's probably one of the most well-known songs next to Iron Man and War Pigs.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that was really, to me, the start of the definitive sound for Sabbath. You know, and the thing what I love about Sabbath is, especially with the Ozzy years, not one album really sounds the same.
No.
You know, you go from the first album, The Paranoid, they don't sound the same. The third album, Master Reality, is the beginning of when they really start to get heavy.
Right.
You know, six songs of classic, just fucking heaviness on an album.
Oh, Sweet Leaf. Like a motherfucker.
Right.
You know, Sweet Leaf, Into the Void.
Yeah.
Children of the Grave.
Yeah, those are iconic, yeah, man.
Dude, I love that yeah. shit right there, dude.
You know, you don't get much better than that. You know, then
Volume 4.
Then Volume 4, which there was at that time, they were so fucked up on drugs.
Oh, yeah.
What? I've never did drugs, dude. Come on now.
Yeah, they were having some party time.
Yeah, that album, they were like, from what I was reading, they were just shipping like fucking tons of coke into the recording studio.
Really, I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty bad.
And the thing is, that's actually one of my favorite albums. That to me, that's like the heaviest Sabbath album there is.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that one too. I mean, I like all the earlier ones. I like really most, I think every Ozzy album that they did, I liked, except Never Say Die, I was not big on. But the other ones, especially Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, holy shit, dude.
Oh, Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath. That to me is just a great album of great melody, heaviness, and great songwriting. To me, that's where it all came together.
And they started really getting a little more almost progressive with some of that stuff.
Exactly. You know, Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, Sabracadabra, Killing Yourself to Live. You know, to me, that was a little bit of a turning point. And, you know, I love that album.
Yeah, me too. I listen to it often. I really dig it. And the thing that cracks me up is like Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, that riff is so fucking heavy. And then they've got like a tambourine going on.
Yeah,
it's like it's so fucked up, but it sounds cool.
It sounds like it's meant to be together.
It's crazy, fucking bottom fucking riff is so wicked. And then to have a tambourine, it's like so out there. So they really started getting, you know, the drugs, I'm sure, had something to do with it. But
Ozzy didn't do drugs.
Progressive, you know, they really did get very, very apart from that original sound, you know.
Yeah, and like I said, no album sounds the same. Because, you know, after that, they had Sabotage. And
yeah, I love that one, too.
Hole in the Sky, Symptom of the Universe.
Yeah.
Just great fucking riffs. And it's like at that time Iommi just never ending riffs. He had you go back to Sabbath, there's so many riffs that he came up with that are so iconic today.
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah. And those outfits, you know, those outfits on Sabotage are fucking crazy, man. Bill Ward looks like he's in his pajamas or something. It's like, dude, really? Like, can't you fucking put some clothes on, bro?
Like, I know, matter. Right? I'm so fucked up. I'm going to bed after this anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny stuff. But yeah, great albums. And then after, what was after Sabotage? Was that Technical Ecstasy?
Yeah, kind of the wheels started to fall off after Sabotage. You know, Technical Ecstasy, I like that album. I think it's a great album.
Me too. I don't like all of it because it gets a little out there, but I do like it too. That was like the last one that I really, really, Ozzy just, like you said, the wheels start coming off.
You know, and Never Say Die. I like Never Say Die, but you could tell that
everything was done right there.
It was definitely falling apart. I mean, you had some great tunes on it. You had Never Say Die and Junior's Eyes. Then you had like on side two, it was like, they started with this jazz thing, and it was like, what?
Yeah, I know.
You know, then Bill Ward actually sang on like a song on Techno Ecstasy, and then he sung on a tune on Never Say Die. And
oh, yeah, he did.
And the thing is, Ozzy actually left the band before Never Say Die. They had this other dude come in to originally do the album named Dave Walker. Ozzy had to change your heart, came back.
Probably a
but
good
at that
day.
Time, he was so fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
Beyond everybody else on drugs that, you know, they're like, by the time it came to after that album and starting what would eventually become Heaven and Hell, you know, he basically got tossed out.
Right.
You know, and Ozzy kind of got himself together because he came out, he did eventually record to me, two iconic solo albums, Blizzard and probably the greatest Ozzy album, Diary of a Madman.
Oh, Diary, yes.
That's the best one, in my opinion, personally. I love that fucking album.
And I'm going to get shit for what I'm going to say. Oh, no. I know I'm going to get shit.
Oh, no. Not your love of Winger.
God damn it. Why'd you have to fucking bring that up?
She's only 17. But, 17. That's a karaoke one there, maybe.
Oh yeah.
That's fucking funny.
You know, I think the wrong people get credit for those two albums.
Yeah. Oh, dude, because Bob Daisley.
Bob Daisley is the one who put those, arranged those albums. You know, and
we could do a total CK segment on Bob Daisley. We probably should, because
with Uriah Heep.
He is, like you said, he arranged most all that stuff. Him and Randy Rhoads on Blizzard and Diary, and wrote most of the lyrics. I mean, Ozzy, you know, couldn't do anything, and it sucks that he got all the credit.
Right.
Yeah, because Ozzy never really wrote lyrics. It's always been Geezer Butler.
Right, and Sabbath, for sure.
Yeah, and I'm going to get shit. I understand Randy was a good guitarist.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, unfortunately, he passed away in a plane crash when he was young. And all of a sudden, he's got this iconic fucking, you know, and I don't want to sound like a dick, but just because you die in a crash or whatever doesn't make you iconic. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, he was an amazing guitar player. Oh,
no doubt.
Not to the point that I agree with you to some extent. I think he was, you know, a little bit because of the tragedy and the way he died, and
I mean,
it makes for a good, quote unquote, a good story.
Van Zandt, right. Skinner, and freaking Cliff Burton from Metallica.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, it elevates you for some reason, because people are like, it romanticizes it. Some,
you know, and to me, there's only a couple people who deserve that status. Right. You know, and like a Stevie Ray Vaughan in the blues community.
Right.
You know, he was just phenomenal to me, but you know, Randy was a great guitar player. Don't get me wrong, you know, and you know, he passed away, and Jakey Lee came. Well, actually, Brad Gillis filled in for a while,
right?
Because Ozzy released that "Speak of the Devil" because he owed the record company a live album,
right?
So he didn't want to really go, and at that time, Randy just died, and he didn't feel right recording anything with Randy with another guitar, so he basically decided to do 12 Sabbath songs at the Old Ritz in New York, recorded it, put it out, and to me, it's a great live album. It's not a bad live album. Brad Gillis actually kills it, you know.
Yeah, he's wicked on there.
Yeah, and he's great.
Right.
And you know, then after that, Ozzy picked up Jakey Lee, who I believe used to be in Rat.
I think you might be right.
I think you're correct. Yeah,
I think he was a member of Rat. And I think Jakey Lee, to me, he's one of my favorite guitarists Ozzy had.
Oh, I loved him too. Bark at the Moon is killer. That album.
Bark at the Moon, and you know, The Ultimate Sin.
Right.
No, it's not as good as Bark, but I just love Jake's playing, and you know, Jake got fucked over. He got fired.
Right.
Never got the writing credit that he deserved from Ozzy. It's just come up that Ozzy actually wanted Jake back in the band for this upcoming tour.
Really?
Yeah. And from what I understand, the stipulation was Jake would be happy to come back if they just admit it and gave him the writing credit he deserved on those albums.
They won't do it.
And Sharon's being a fucking cunt and doesn't want to do it.
Wow.
You know, but Jake did form a band right after Ozzy called
Badlands,
which great fucking rock band, great hard rock band. Three albums they put out. He had a singer called Ray Gillen, who we will mention again in an upcoming, probably in the third segment of the Sabbath thing.
Right.
Ray Gillen will come up again. And the funny thing with Ray Gillen is he died of AIDS. And from what I understand is, because he had AIDS, and I guess he never divulged to the woman he was having sex with that he had AIDS.
Oh my God!
Oh, dude, you got it.
And I guess he got sued, and something happened with the royalties from those albums from Badlands, where all the royalties for the album go towards the victims of him. From what I understand,
the royalties.
Yeah, so Jakey Lee again gets fucked because now Atlantic Records doesn't even they're not even available anymore. They're deleted from the catalog.
Wow.
So Jakey Lee gets fucked again.
Yeah, that sucks.
You know. Then you know, Ozzy recruited to me fucking the beast of all beasts of guitar players, Zakk Wylde.
Yeah, he is badass.
He's just a crazy badass motherfucker, and he's a great fucking guitar player. Agreed. And you know, and his own band Black Label Society, just nasty stuff, nasty fucking metal. You know, and they released, you know, No More Tears, Osmosis, a couple albums after that were okay.
Right.
No, nothing like the first couple albums that Ozzy put out.
Right.
You know, and then again, he had, after Zakk, he had Gus G from Firewind for a while. Did one album with him.
No. Hey, you got the cops coming to your house again,
dude.
The
cops are coming.
Oh,
man.
Jesus Christ. First the train, now the fucking cops.
Right.
Wildman Street's going fucking nuts.
Wildman Street's going wild.
Apparently. Yeah. So what's Ozzy? I mean, I know we're wrapping up Ozzy, but I mean, it just seems like he never quits, man. It's just, he's still going.
Now he's on his farewell tour or whatever. Quote farewell tour with Zakk back in the band.
Right.
I mean, who the fuck knows?
Yeah.
You know, is he going to retire? Is he not? Didn't he retire like 20 years ago?
Yeah.
With the No More Tours tour.
Right.
Yeah.
Then he came out with the fuck retirement tour after that. So.
Right.
Yeah. Now it's a No More Tours tour two or something like that.
Don't know.
You know.
It's fucking ridiculous.
And we can't forget that in 2013, you know, Sabbath did reunite with
Ozzy.
Oh yes, 100%. Yeah,
and before that, Ozzy did sue Tony Iommi for the name of Black Sabbath.
Really,
I heard about that.
Yeah, that's why eventually, when which we'll get into with the Dio years, when Dio came back and reformed the band with Geezer and Tony, that's why they had to name the band Heaven and Hell.
Okay.
Because Ozzy said that Tony had no right to basically hoard the name Black Sabbath, and they settled out of court, and that's what they came up with. So,
wow,
you know, they came out with the 13 album in 2013.
Right.
A great album, heavy as fuck. Going back to the roots. Obviously Bill Ward was not involved. I guess he has some issues with alcoholism and health
He just couldn't play anymore.
I don't think he has the chops. I don't think he has the chops to go out on tour. They used the drummer from Rage Against the Machine, believe it or not.
No, he did a good job.
Yeah, he actually did. And I believe they used Mike Borden when he went on tour. No, I'm sorry. Tommy Kluftos from Ozzy's band. When they went on tour, they used him.
Huh.
You know, so last year they wrapped up. Sabbath wrapped up their tour, and supposedly that's it for them. There's no more. They're done.
Right.
You know, we'll see. Yeah. I know Tony Iommi's got some things going on with Tony Martin, who was in Sabbath for a while, which we'll discuss again.
Yeah, next week we'll next be week, doing the Dio years.
Dio years, awesome. Yeah, yeah.
That'll be awesome. You know,
Dio, very, very extensive career in music, so it's interesting.
Yeah, for sure. You know? Now, dude, we are fucking pumped over here because next week on Thursday. In Bloomington, Illinois at the Castle, I'm going to see fucking Cannibal Corpse and Hate Eternal. It's going to be so fucking badass. Yeah. November 15th at the Castle. The last time I saw Cannibal Corpse was at the Castle, and we were opening for played,
yeah. I was going to really say, cool. Did you guys open?
We did. We did.
And that the new Hate Eternal album, fucking killer.
Yeah, I haven't heard it yet.
Yeah, I've actually got killer. We're going to play a clip of it toward the end of the show. Right so on. I've got Cannibal Corpse was before you. And we've got Hate Eternal coming up later. So, yeah, it's going to be good. I'm going to be there. I know we talked last week about that Queensryche Fates Warning Tour, new Queensryche coming out next year. So lots of good things cooking, man. It's just a good time to be in fucking metal.
And if there's a great album coming out this Friday, a band called Arsis. I know we turned a lot of people on to Revocation.
Arsis is right up there with Revocation.
Yeah, I know. Wicked. Like all these people are loving the Revocation after we discussed, which is awesome.
Yeah. So check out Arsis because they are very similar to Revocation.
And Revocation's killing it.
Yeah, they're a great band.
Unbelievably skilled, man.
The album's called Visitant. It's out Friday on Metal Blade.
Of course.
Check it out.
Nice.
No, actually came. I'm sorry. It came out last week. I'm sorry.
It's out.
I have to check.
It's out. Because I got it. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Okay.
It's out. Okay. Yeah. It's out.
Like I said,
it's a great album.
Okay. I'm to check that out. We, Chris, you don't have any local metal
not
stuff?
Not offhand at the moment. No, I don't.
All right. Well, we're gonna wrap up metal, man. Thanks, CK, for calling in, buddy. Always good to talk to you, my friend.
Hell yeah.
No problem.
CK,
I should
man.
Be able to go live next week too. So you know.
Awesome.
Sounds good.
Love talking live with you guys, man. It's awesome.
All right, dude.
Later, bro.
Later, brother.
All right, later, brother.
Dude, I love that song, Into the Void.
Into
man.
The Void, Black Sabbath, yes. Yeah,
that was a good one with CK talking about that.
Yeah, part two next week.
Yeah, Dio years, so that's going to be good. CK's just the wealth of fucking knowledge, dude. Amidst the trains, fucking planes and automobiles,
and the cops,
fucking police, volleyball with the fucking Ecuadorians.
Fucking getting it out there, dude.
Dude, it's crazy, man. It's wild,
oh,
man.
Yeah.
So, no, we're in Mayhem now, and I wanted to talk briefly, dude, about the amazing new fucking studio in progress. Man, you are the guy fucking doing it.
Hey, man.
But, dude, it was impressive watching you Saturday just blow that fucking wall up, dude.
Yeah,
it was pretty cool.
It's pretty fucking nice. And we made it bigger than we planned on, so it's going to be even cooler, dude.
Dude, we can have a square dance in that fucking...
Yeehaw!
It's going to be killer, though, when it's all done, but... Chris built the wall to separate my garage basically in half or a little more than half, maybe. I don't know.
It's about, I think it's like 10 by 16 foot room.
Yeah,
so.
That's about how big it is. And it's solid drywall wall. All my, the garage here at the house is concrete block with fiberglass insulation, then drywall on studs. So yeah, it's
solid.
It's going to be solid. And then when he's all done, we got a door and everything to go up, and it's going to be decked the fuck out.
Pete hired a lovely young lady to do some
Carolyn,
badass.
Hired her to come in. She is really good at painting, and she's going to do a complete paint job in the garage part. And then the actual studio itself is
going
to be sick as fuck. We're not going to divulge everything, but just kind of a hint. There's going to be a big Murder Metal Mayhem logo on the wall. It's going to look like a murder was committed inside this motherfucker.
It's going to look like hell.
It's going to look a little bit like hell. It's going to look a little bit like some murder fucking went down.
Yeah.
And there's just going to be a general mayhem thing going down because I ordered a mask. I was
going to say, Pete, you just bought
Sick Rick. SickRickMasks.com. You got to go there. SickRick Masks.com. He has got the fucking most wicked shit, but I got us, because I've been waiting to do it, the Venom black metal head.
Yeah, the goat head. You know what the cover of the black metal album looks like with the goat head.
With the pentagram on its head, like, and shit. It's fucking badass. It's sick. And then it was a little bit more, but how can you not get that?
Dude, you got to get the inverted cross stand.
In the inverted cross stand he sells like as an accessory. I mean, how fucking cool is that?
But you got to have it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to go for the Venom goat head, you got to have the inverted cross
stand. 100%.
So Rick is putting that together. I cannot wait to get it because we're going to put that in there too. So when Carolyn is all done painting, it's going to be fucking killer. We're going to have tons of pictures.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be doing video. We're shooting a commercial in there. I mean, we're going to go crazy. Yeah. So it's going to be, if you thought the show was over the fucking top, we're going to be so inspired.
We're going to have all space. This shit. We're definitely going to try and get more bands in.
Yeah,
in
we're going to have all kinds of room.
Because we got room now. And
yeah, we could even have bands live.
Yeah, we could actually have bands come in and jam some shit for us.
Yes.
Dude.
So expect bigger and better from Murder Metal Mayhem. We definitely had a lot of people checking out the bonus episode I posted reading my short story, Long Dark Hallway. So thanks, guys, for checking that out.
It was good. I listened to it, and it was good, man.
Cool. Thanks. I was happy with the way it turned out. I had never done one of those before, so I wanted to kind of test the waters because I'm thinking about doing some Audible short story reading. So the next one I plan to do is part one of my Deeper Than Dead project called 99 Steps. It's fucking wicked. I'm planning on doing that one next.
Hell
so
yeah.
If you guys like that, there's more to follow. So thanks for checking it out. Now, last week I told a story about a low 12 road trip to Kentucky.
Yeah, you said you had another story, and I'm like, all right, let's listen to another road trip story, bro.
You know, I thought coming off the last one, it would be good to tell this one. This one was really wild, and it's one of those things you literally couldn't have scripted it any better. Right. What happened was, it was in the summer of 2001, because I remember it well. I was doing chemo.
That would make you remember a lot of shit.
Yeah, and I was not feeling very well, but we had this show booked in Columbia, Missouri. We love going down there, usually a couple, three times a year. And so we were all pumped. We were going. Right. I was sick as a fucking dog, literally puking, but whatever. I gotta go do this show.
Fuck it.
So we went. So at the time, we had a Ford Astro van pulling the trailer.
Hold on. You can't have a Ford Astro van. Astro's a Chevy.
Is it a Chevy Astro?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought it was a Ford.
No.
Anyway.
Because I had one.
Okay. An Astro van. So we're driving this Chevy Astro van, apparently. And
maybe it was an Aerostar.
Yeah, maybe it was.
Yeah, if it was a Ford, it might have been an Aerostar.
Yeah, I don't remember. My memory sucks.
Anyway, the vehicle it's doesn't fucking matter.
No, it doesn't, because we had had a problem the weekend before. We were up in Milwaukee. We had it overheating. So we had a little issue, but Les fixed it.
Right.
So we're on the road, and we're going to Columbia, Missouri, which is like a five-hour trip.
And yeah, so, one way, dude. Yeah, that's
it's a haul. So anyway, we get a half hour into the trip. We're in Lincoln, Illinois, and the van is like crazy overheating. So Les is like, fuck. So we pull off the highway, fucking smoking. I mean, it's bad.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So I'm like looking for the phone number for the bar, because I was going to call him and be like, dude, like,
we
didn't even make it out of Illinois, and, you know, this thing's having issues. So Les is like, no, don't call. I'm like, okay. So he opens up the hood. It's fucking smoking. I mean, I'm just like, wow.
Dude, that shit fucking blows.
And it's
too
hot,
dude.
And I'm not feeling good. And it sucked. So anyway, Les is like, hang on a minute. He goes, I know a guy in Lincoln.
Oh, fuck. Nice.
With a van the same as this van, but a year, it was either older or newer.
A newer one way or year. The other. Yeah, yeah.
And he was junking it because Les's wife went to church with this other couple in Lincoln.
Right.
And so anyway, the guy had called Les recently to see if he wanted anything out of that before he junked it, because he knew he had the same van.
Right, yeah. And at the time, I'm sure Les is like, no, not really.
He didn't really need anything. Yeah. So anyway, so we get it cooled down enough. He drives it in town to this dude's house. Again, we're at the exit to get to this dude's house. So it's like, how is this even possible?
You can't fucking pass that shit up.
And I'm just like sitting there like, there ain't no fucking way this is going to work out. Because he couldn't get a hold of the guy.
Right.
So he's like, fuck it. He just went to his house. This fucking van, okay, is in this dude's driveway on blocks. Les pulls up to the fucking van. And I'm sitting there and I stopwatched it. It was like 49 minutes and so many seconds. Him, Les, and Tim had the hoods popped because I'm over fucking puking by a fucking tree.
You're sick as shit. Yeah.
I wouldn't have been able to do anything anyway, but had the hoods open. Tim was like pulling the radiator off of the other one. Les and Wes are dropping the bed. And they switched them out, and I'm just sitting there like, you have got to be fucking
kidding
me. They
just fucking straight up switched the radiator like that, dude. That's fucking
the best. We were on
the
road,
dude.
In 49 fucking minutes. I was stupefied.
Dude, that's fucking crazy.
We pulled up to the bar, and it seemed like every time we went to Columbia, there was some kind of crazy story. This by far was the craziest. But I remember pulling up to the bar, and we were like 5 minutes early.
Oh!
And I remember the other band, Slug Trail, they came out.
Right, right.
Saw the van. Hey, guys, what's up, man?
Yeah, like, you wouldn't believe what the half.
And they're like, what happened this time? You know, because it was like always something.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, you're not even going to believe it. And I was showing them the pictures on the camera. Right, and they were like, oh, my God, are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, no, these dudes are fucking ridiculous.
They just changed the fucking radiator out like that.
It was fucking sweet, man.
That's
so
hilarious.
It was good story.
Dude, fucking, that kind of reminds, talking about the radiator overheating, the van overheating and shit. When I was staying in Alabama, I had to come back here for a while. Well, Craig and Bubba fucking took me back down to Alabama one time in the old brown van. You know what van I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Old brown van.
Old brown van, dude. Fucking, this motherfucker starts leaking antifreeze, and there was no reservoir to fill it up with and shit.
Oh, damn.
So it starts overheating a little bit. All right, we stop. We fill the radiator back up. It gets a little low. We stop again, fold up. It's like, we got to figure something out, dude. This ain't working, man.
Right.
So we fucking just finished a big-ass bottle of Gatorade. We fucking, like, zip-tied it to the inside of the hood and stuck the hose in the Gatorade bottle and filled that with freaking antifreeze. That way it could still supply it out of a makeshift fucking reservoir, dude.
Oh, my God, yeah, dude.
Yeah, it's some white trash ingenuity, bro. Totally.
Sometimes, man,
to go all the way to Mobile, Alabama, and they had to drive it back. I stayed in Alabama.
Oh,
they
man.
Drove back.
Jesus. Yeah, I mean, you get into some crazy stories, and Les, thank God, he was such a great mechanic, man.
Yeah,
Les
is an awesome mechanic.
He changed the fuel pump in the van, too, on his back in a gravel lot behind a Super 8.
Jesus
on
Christ.
Our way to Oklahoma
fuel
City.
Fuel pumps fucking suck,
he had to
dude.
Drop the gas tank
yeah,
to get
100%.
It.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, it was fucked.
Fuck that.
Yeah, he did it within like a couple hours. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, he was unreal.
That's fucking crazy.
So, Les, if you're listening, because I know you said you've been checking the shit out.
Yeah,
you're the man,
yeah,
brother.
Dude.
We got to get you in here to share some other stories, because there's tons of them. But anyway, killer cage match, dude. I know a lot of people love
this. We already
this
told
part.
You guys who they are.
Right.
So, we got Dahmer and fucking Manson.
Right.
What are they fighting with, Pete?
They are fighting with, now remember, thanks to Stacy Dudley and Troy Leach for providing us the numbers. Anybody new to this, we have a list of 50 killers and 50 objects. We ask the listeners each week to pick two numbers a piece. So we get two people, two numbers, two killers, two objects. So that's how this
Boom.
Works. And so it's been a lot of fun. We've done it live.
Yeah, that was fun.
And that was
live,
fun
yeah.
at Night Shop. If you haven't seen that, we got that video up on our YouTube channel. But anyway, so the two objects that Dahmer and Manson are going to use this week, a concrete block. That could do some fucking damage.
Yeah, you're going to hurt somebody, but...
A stuffed horse cock.
Yeah.
So that's what we got to work with here.
It's like Mr. Hands all over again.
Yeah. So these two are in a cage, and they've got a concrete block and a horse cock stuffed. Now, what do you think, dude? I mean...
Look, here's the thing. The concrete block is probably just basically going to sit there because... Manson's going to be like, I ain't even strong enough to pick that shit up.
You don't think he could even
pick it up? Nah, he'd probably pick it up, but he ain't going to do much with it. But then again,
he's a little dude, man.
But then again, Dahmer's going to look at the fucking horse cock and be like, God, I want you.
Dude, like, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, Dahmer might get very distracted with the horse cock.
He might get very distracted with the horse cock. But
fucking who knows, dude? Manson could get a little burst of energy and fucking clock him over the head.
If, now say Manson got the... Got the horse cock.
Oh.
Dahmer's going to come whoop his ass and take it.
Oh, yeah.
Because if fucking Manson's got that in his hands, or he might just like be like, hey, what are you going to do with that? You want to come over here and do something with it? Or what's going on over here,
man?
Oh,
damn. Well, this could get interesting, like, is what you're claiming.
Yeah, it could get super interesting. All right, well. I mean, but Dahmer did, as far as fighting...
Yeah, I think Dahmer's gonna obviously win. physically superior, bigger dude than Manson's, just too little and fucking burnt.
Yeah, he's an old hippie that writes songs about flowers and killing people. Yeah. Wait.
Yeah, so I agree. I think Dahmer would win, but I mean, honestly, if he got a hold of either of those two objects, he's beating Manson to fucking death with that shit.
Oh, 100%. He's going to beat the fuck out of him.
Beat the fuck out of him. So I think we would have to agree, Dahmer.
Let us know what y'all think, who you think would win. Give us a scenario.
Yeah exactly. Have some fun with it. So, yeah, we definitely love doing some killer cage match every week. And so we'll keep on doing it. You guys seem to keep on liking it. So thank you very much. We'll move on. Yeah. I fucking hate Eternal.
Goddamn,
dude.
Death metal.
Yeah, definitely some fucking brutal shit. The bumper music this episode, Propane, Cannibal Corpse, Black Sabbath, and of course Hate Eternal. Definitely thanks everybody out there for listening. Keep seeing new countries popping up.
New countries, new cities.
Yeah, like, Mexico seems to be just like lighting it up. I mean, I don't know.
We love it. Vatos Locos forever, Holmes.
Yeah, exactly. We love you guys down there. Thanks for listening. If you guys, down there in Mexico want to send us some food,
because we love Mexican tacos.
Food. Yeah, some fucking tamales or something. Dude. Send that shit to P.O. Box 554.
Yes.
Hayworth, Illinois 61745. And really anybody listening that wants to send us some cool shit for the new studio, maybe we'll put something
hang up. We'll post it up on the page. Take pictures, post it up on the page.
Yeah, we got Lance from Schizo making us some barf art. I can't wait for that shit, dude. The Venom mask from Rick. I mean, we got some cool shit coming. So seriously, if anybody wants to send something to the P.O. Box.
That'd be great.
Yeah, Murder Metal Mayhem, P.O. Box 554, Hayworth, Illinois 61745. So send it. Also, some country or cities, Ontario, Canada has some cities lighting it up. And in New South Wales and Australia, same thing. So, fuck yeah. Thank you, guys. Yeah,
thanks for listening, everybody. Yeah. I appreciate that shit.
So, we got one here. You want
to
read it, bro?
We got Kevin Robbins says, I can't wait to meet you guys at the Dark History Con in 2 weeks. Well, dude, we'll be there for sure. So definitely can't wait to meet you and anybody else who's coming out next weekend.
We're going to talk about that briefly after this, the fan responses or listener responses. But yeah, we're going to be there. It's going to be wicked.
Yeah, and Rick Mass, he's going to be, sorry, Gaither is going to be there.
Yeah, Jeff Gaither will be there,
John Borowski.
There's a ton of fucking cool people that are going to be there. So fuck yeah, Kevin. Tina Powell Heck commented, I find myself counting down the days to the new one, till the new one comes out. I think you guys are a great team, and I love listening to you. So thank you, Tina. Yeah, that's really cool. she's been really supportive and a new listener, you know, new as in a few, couple, 3 months ago, but she's been like really commenting. She's provided the numbers in the Killer Cage match.
Out there.
So,
yeah, so
thanks,
thank
Tina.
You. And then Brenda commented, I really like the Long Dark Hallway story, Pete. I hope you do more. I love your voice, by the way. So,
oh, boy.
That sultry voice of yours, dude.
Apparently.
And
yeah.
Yes, Pete's story, dude, I listened to it like myself, and it was fucking amazing, like
thanks,
I said
man.
Earlier. But yeah, Brenda, yeah. I hope he does some more, too.
Yeah, thanks, Brenda, and thanks, dude. Yeah, I'm definitely going to do more. Tim Yoder emailed, I put your sticker, I love this one, I put your sticker on my truck, and the looks I get are pretty funny. One dude threw up the horns the other day in Bloomington and screamed murder metal.
That's
mayhem.
Fucking awesome, dude.
So, yeah, that's fucking cool,
amazing.
Tim. So, thanks for
thanks,
sending
Tim,
that.
Thanks, Tim, and thanks for dude throwing the horns.
Fuck yeah, dude. Whoever you are, I'm glad you dig it. So, thanks, Tim. And don't miss us. We talked about the Dark History and Horror Convention. We're going to be doing our very first live podcast at that event on Saturday, November 17th. But the convention goes the 16th, which 17. Is Friday, 17 and 18 through Sunday in Urbana, Illinois. So definitely go check it out. You can go on Facebook and look for Dark History Convention and bam, you're going to find it.
Yeah, and there's going to be so many things going on there.
Yeah, he's got like, I don't know how many, maybe 40 different vendors. I mean, it's fucking nuts.
It's going to be crazy.
Horror movie actors, writers.
Musicians.
Yeah, it's just going to be crazy. First Jason will be there.
Yeah, and that First Jason goes on Saturday right before we do.
Right after, we're like opening for First Jason. So,
and if you don't know who First Jason is, it's literally
The First Jason.
The First Jason.
From
and
Friday
he started
the
13th. A band, and that he called his band First Jason.
Right, yeah, it's pretty
literally
cool stuff.
The First Jason.
Yeah, so he's got tons of great events going on, people there, music. It's going to be so killer. And we'll be there through the whole thing, but on Saturday at 7 p.m.
I'll be there lonely for a few hours.
Yeah.
But it's all good.
It's crazy because we had a conflict with our scheduling. The convention moved a week, and so I had already committed to do a local author fair at the Bloomington Public Library.
Yeah,
on Saturday the 17th.
And then it got switched, and it's like the same date. It's like, oh, well.
So, yeah, so I'll be at that from 2 to 4, but then from there, buzzing over to meet up with you, Chris, at the Dark History Convention, and then get ready for our live podcast. So that's going to
be
fucking nuts.
Fun, dude.
It's going to be a very, very busy day. But, yeah, so make sure you guys check that out. But, you know, we can't let these guys leave because
we got a
special treat.
No, dude, I like the way you did this one. Pete played me this. We got to leave you with karaoke. You know we got to do that.
We got to do some karaoke, and, but we always try to tie stuff in. So we did
it's
this
definitely
one.
Tied in. And
tied to
plus
the
candy got man. Added candy to it.
Yes, there's a little extra sweet confectionery delights on the candy.
Yes.
So hope you guys dig it. So until next time, keep one foot in the gutter.
And your fist in a motherfucker's asshole.
Mouth water. I want candy. Team Pasadena home, but some of the people who went in were carried out in plastic bags. They had been murdered. Death in most cases came after the victims had been subjected to various sex acts and torture. The victims were all boys in the early to mid-teens who allegedly had been lured into a death trap by this young man, 17-year-old Elmer Wayne Henley.
Kidney on the beach is nothing better. But all the candy when it's wrapped in a sweater. Someday soon I'm gonna make you mine. Then I'll have candy all the time. I want candy. I want candy. I want candy. I want candy.
It was Henley who unveiled this secret of mass killings and led police to the graves of the dead. Henley called the police to the home of Dean Curl. Said he killed that Pasadena resident. Henley said the 34-year-old Curl had talked about killing several young men and burying them in this boat storage in South Houston.
Mother! Mother! Man!